Hi, and welcome back to episode 42 of Fresh Out of Tokens, which means we have reached the podcast age of Life, the Universe, and the Answer to Everything. And with me, as always, is David.
Hello.
And I'm Cypher Tier, also known as Tanya. It depends on where you find me. And we are lucky to have with us this week Jamie Broadnax, who you probably know more by her online web presence and business as the lead person of Black Gold Nerds.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Those of you joining us, we are part of the Geek.fm network, along with Geeks and Sneaks, Chromatic Life, and More Than Bits. We have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with Chachi Bobinks. There's also a blog to complement the show and where you can follow us at outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, hate mail, though don't really send us hate mail. It will make me, at least me, cry. I can't speak for David. Feel free to drop us a line at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com, and you can also follow us on Twitter at outoftokenscast. And musical accompaniment for Fresh Out of Tokens is provided by Mike Moody. You can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1. Let's get into questions, and I figured this week we could mix it up if David wants to start off.
We should, I suppose, start off with Jamie. Do you want to tell us a bit about you and what you do and, you know, just who you are in general?
Certainly. So I am a blogger, podcaster, social media ranter, raver, and I am the managing editor of a website called Black Girl Nerds. And Black Girl Nerds is an online community that embraces nerd culture, and it's specifically targeted to Black women and women of color. But it is a very inclusive community, so anybody can be a part of it. And there are many followers and fans of Black Girl Nerds that aren't necessarily Black Girl Nerds. So that's what I do. I do have a day job that pays the bills. So it is a very challenging time for me, having a full-time job and managing this huge online community. But it's a lot of fun what I do, and I really enjoy being a part of this. So that's what I do.
Awesome. So, you know, there are people who are covering, you know, the black nerd or blurdy space, as some of us call it. But what prompted you to start? Because you've been doing this for quite a few years now. And, you know, what made you decide to focus on, you know, things that are targeted toward black women and girls, you know, because we don't get to be nerds in a lot of spaces.
Right. You're right. Well, what prompted me to do it, and it has been a while, it's been 4 years now, 4 years this past February. On February 1st, 2012, I went on Google and decided to look up information about black women in nerd culture, because I noticed nerd culture was something that was evolving and growing and becoming very prominent in our pop culture space, seeing it all over in TV shows like Big Bang Theory, and seeing movies and other websites that are more on the mainstream that focuses on nerd culture. But in all of these various mediums, I didn't see any black women represented in the space. And I just decided to go on Google one night and type in black girl nerds. And nothing came up in Google, which is ridiculous. In a search engine where you can find relatively anything under the sun, I could not find anything with that term. So it was that night that I had a blogger account already set up. I had been blogging off and on since 2005, so I'd already had a blogger account set up, and I just decided to use that term, Black Girl Nerds, and it was from there that the blog started. And everything kind of happened very quickly. It was really strange, because within 24 hours after I had published the blog, I had a published author, no less, email me saying, hey, I see this website called Black Girl Nerds. I'd like to contribute and write content with you on the site. And I'm like, are you serious? So right away, people noticed the website, wanted to contribute. And it wasn't just my voice. It was, you know, their voices as well, which I'm glad, because Black Girl Nerds was just about Jamie Broadnax. It would be a very boring site. So that's where the online community started to grow, and creating a lot of social media pages and networks and being engaged in those networks had helped. So yeah, that's what prompted it, just doing a Google search and not finding any content that represented women like me.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
Very much so. I mean, usually when I get no returns on a Google search, it's because I've typed something wrong.
And I should say that, you know, I typed in the search term and like black girls came up and girl nerds, you know. But when I kept clicking through the relevant searches, I did stumble onto a Yahoo Answers site. And someone, you know, Yahoo Answers, someone randomly asks a question and random people will answer them. Someone actually asked the question, do black girl nerds exist? So I did find that. And just that alone was enough to prompt me to go, okay, yeah, this is an omen here. Like, this is a sign that obviously I should do something, that there's someone out there that don't even think that women like me exist, like I'm a unicorn or something. You know what? I think I was so struck by the question, I didn't even pay attention to what the answers were. I just was, like, floored at the fact that someone actually legitimately asked that question. It wasn't like someone was being a troll or being malicious, but they really, you know, wanted to know, do black girl nerds exist? So, yeah, I'm curious to know that myself. I need to go back and look for that Yahoo Answers site again.
Wow.
I have Googled things I couldn't find, but only when I was trying to come up with a title for a website. I have to try to not find stuff, is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. It's a very weird thing to not find any kind of content for certain people within a subculture. And it was very interesting, too, which if you go to my personal Twitter page at Jamie Broadnax, and there's a pinned tweet there, someone actually had sent this tweet to me. But when you typed in black girl nerds in the Google image results, it was images of white women wearing black clothing.
What?
So no black women, just white women in black clothes and white women wearing black glasses, you know, glasses with black frames. Now, if you do the search, my picture comes up, my website, all of the images from my website comes up. So when I think back about it, I'm like, wow, SEO-wise, that was pretty brilliant. Because, yeah, you really don't see a lot of content, unfortunately, that are about us. But now, that's changing. The landscape is definitely changing, and I'm here for it. I think it's a really exciting time right now for us.
Yeah. We kind of touched on this before we started recording. Do you game? And if so, what sort of games do you like?
I don't game currently, and I talked briefly about this to Tanya before we recorded. I tend to get super, like, obsessed with things and spend a unhealthy amount of time on it. Twitter is a prime example. So I don't game for that reason, because I have been known, like, the last games I played were PC games, and I was very addicted to The Sims in particular, and I would spend hours, like literally spending 8 to 10 hours or more playing these games. So nothing would get done if I were to game now, but yeah, PC games are the last games that I played. And then, like, back when I was younger, I was an NES kid. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and Secret of Mana, which I think that was Super NES. And Metroid and Mega Man, like, those were my games. And I also had a Sega Genesis and Xbox. So I did play a lot of those games as, you know, I was a kid and when I was younger. But now, not so much anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense. The Sims is dangerous.
They certainly are, yeah. And I mean, I played like all the expansion packs, so like Hot Date and the ones where the animals with the pets, and yeah, like it got a little crazy for me, so I had to stop.
Yeah, The Sims can suck up your whole day. You'll look up, be like, it was daylight when I started.
Right. They were having more productive lives than I was. That's what was going on there.
Oh, Sims. I mean, I love The Sims, and I did buy TS4, but I'm afraid to get real hardcore into it because I have stuff to do. But, you know, speaking of not gaming because you have a lot to do, your internet presence has really grown since you started Black Girl Nerds. So I was wondering, what advice would you have for someone who is looking to start or grow a similar community? Because, you know, like, a lot of people want to do things. Maybe they've got a niche within a niche that they don't feel is being served, like you saw a few years ago. Right. What advice would you have for someone?
So first thing I would say is kind of figure out what type of site you're going to have and who your niche is going to be, if you're going to go niche. You can go broad if you want. It's going to be incredibly competitive for you, but figure out who your audience is going to be. And then from there, just really be consistent. You know, I think that has been the key for me in this space, and it just being allowed to grow and evolve over time, is I've been very consistent in the last 4 years with editorials, with the podcast episodes, with the social media, engaging with my followers every day. And a lot of that does have to do with just my personality. I love social media. I love Twitter. I'm obsessed with Twitter. So it helps. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, something that's a chore for me. It happens naturally. So yeah, my advice is to just be very diligent and consistent in your content, updating, managing. If you're going to go the podcast route, just make sure you do your podcasts on a specific frequency. So if it's weekly, make sure your podcast is getting uploaded every week. If it's bi-weekly, every 2 weeks. And don't, you know, fall behind on that, because that whole saying out of sight, out of mind, I mean, that's real. I mean, I had a hiatus period, which was through no fault of my own. My house caught on fire, but I had a hiatus period where I wasn't producing any podcast episodes, and the numbers dropped significantly. So that is something that you need to think about if you are going to be a content creator, is just, you know, just being very on top of making sure that your presence stays relevant. And if that means you have to do things, you know, on a daily basis, then that's what you're going to have to do. So there is a lot of work involved with that. But there's a huge payoff, because people, you know, will be able to notice you.
True, because when we started out, we were bi-weekly. And then we went to weekly, and I don't think we've even really missed an episode, even with the holidays, because one thing we found is that it's good to have a backlog.
Yeah.
But I just find that weird that, you know, you had a house fire. It wasn't like you just stopped making the podcast.
Yeah, that happened. But also, one thing that I have done, too, is let people know that I'm going on hiatus, which is good, because people can't. You know, not everybody expects you to be doing this 365 days a year. So there are times throughout the summer months that I'm saying, you know, hey, BGM Podcast, we're going on vacation. We'll be back on this date. So that's okay, because then your followers have an expectation of, oh, they're on hiatus, but I'll look forward to downloading their shows, you know, come this date. So I have done that as well, because, you know, podcasting, you guys know, it's like having another job. So having that break, you definitely need that every once in a while.
Yeah. I mean, we seem to, you know, come back to this quite often, but I think a lot of people don't understand that it's not just us sitting behind the mic for an hour and a half once a week, and voila, a show happened.
Right. There's planning, pre-production, post-production, yep. Wrangling yes. guests, co-hosts, yeah, the whole nine.
Yeah, it's Yeah, it takes a lot of time and effort, and I don't talk about me enough, so people often forget that how much work it really is that we do over here.
Yeah.
Oh, we wanted to ask, Jamie, what kind of pushback have you faced in relation to Black Girl Nerds? Is it particularly difficult or even upsetting when other people of color don't see what you're trying to do in regards to representation?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. I love the fact that you brought up other people of color, because that's happened. It is frustrating, because I think right now we're in a time where people can create their own platform, you know, being in the digital age, and get there's notoriety, like they're being recognized, and a lot of marginalized groups are being recognized, right? So that's been happening with Black Girl Nerds, but it is frustrating when there's other, you know, people of color, other women of color that may throw pushback because they feel like it's, you know, either a competition situation or they feel threatened by your space in some way. And I look at it this way: I think there's room for all of us. I really do. I would love to see more people having websites like Black Girl Nerds. I mean, don't call it Black Girl Nerds, but, you know, I would love to see other websites that are about Black women in nerd and geek culture. And there are, and I'm happy for that. And many of those folks have reached out to me saying, hey, you know, can you link us on your site? And hey, can you promote us through our YouTube page and things of that nature? And I love doing that. So I genuinely feel like there is room in this in this time right now for all of us to be able to shine. And just because someone has a larger platform than another person, that should never be seen as a threat. That should never be seen as something that is going to infringe on your success. Because I have my lane and you have your lane. And one day your lane you may go way past me in your lane than where I am. So, yeah, it is frustrating when that happens, but, you know, I focus on my lane, I focus on what I'm doing, and I focus on the positive aspect of what I'm doing and then the support that I'm getting rather than the pushback. Because one of the things that I'm currently working on at, birthday's coming up soon, so I'm getting old, 36? Yikes. At 36 years old, I am still reeling with the fact that when I get harsh criticism from people, that I internalize that way too much, more than when I get positive criticism. 100 people can say to me, hey, Jamie, you're doing a great job. We love you. We admire your work. And then one person can say something really mean and nasty to me, and I will take that one comment and, like, just relish on it all day long. So that is something I am working through now, because I feel like, you know, it just goes with the territory. People are always going to criticize. I mean, I criticize. I guess I consider myself a pop culture critic in some ways. So I definitely have to be able to deal with that as well when I'm dishing it out. But yeah, I really feel like at this time, we all really should just focus on supporting each other and focusing on what's going to help us become more successful as marginalized voices, because we all have room in this space for what is happening when you can create your own website, you can create your own podcast, you can have a social media presence and be recognized by so many people on social media and have followers that are celebrities. I mean, anybody can do what I'm doing. It's like there's no secret to it. But you got to work hard at it and you got to be consistent. So anyway, I feel like I went on a tangent and just kind of went in a different direction than your question. So I hope I addressed that accordingly.
No, that's fine, because and there's a reason I put that question in, because it wasn't initially in our rosters. Because today I kind of did the, hey, I got some followers post convention. This is what I do. And one person who doesn't follow me, I don't even know where they came from, ran in straw man ablaze with, "You're policing artists." And I was like, what? And, you know, So I did my kind of whole, this is what I do, this is blah, blah, blah. And my one tweet about, you know, I started I Need Diverse Games, and this is kind of what I talk about. Someone's like, let artists be artists. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? Where did you even come from? And they're like, well, you're policing, telling people what they can and can't do. I was like, no, this is not at all what I've said. This is me just merely stating what I'm working on.
Right.
And I think people are still replying to this dude. But he pulled every straw man out, every logical fallacy out. One of my friends even sent me this imager photo bucket of all the ref calls you can have of logical fallacy and straw man and circular logic. And it was really disheartening, because it wasn't like the typical white dude I expect when I get these kind of responses. It was a dude, a man of color.
Yeah.
Not a black dude, because someone immediately was like, well, it must be a hotep. And I'm like, that would be a lot easier.
Ashy Larry.
Right. I'm like, you know, if some black dude wants to hate on me for what I'm doing, I would not have been surprised. I'd been like, okay, hotep, you've had your moment, bye.
Right.
But this dude was like, well, I'm an artist and blah. And it's like, but other people who make games are replying to you and telling you that you are full of shit. I think he's still going on. I stopped watching after a while.
Oh, God.
But, you know, back to that point, it's like, I see a lot of times on Twitter that, you know, when a person of color is prospering, they're doing well without fail. Mm-hmm. There's someone who has to come along and go, well, you know, they ain't shit. And here's like stuff they did 15 years ago. And this is why they're still not shit. And you're just like,
yep.
Are we 12?
I chalk it all up to insecurity. I mean, there's a lot of us out there, and I'm a very insecure person myself. But there's a lot of us out there that just feel threatened by some way by other people's success, because we feel like our shortcomings aren't good enough. And we have to harp on their success in order to feel better about our shortcomings. So, yeah, I see that a lot happening, especially within marginalized groups. And it saddens me because that's not how this works. We need to actually support one another because there's a bigger enemy to fight in all of this than each other. So we're really all fighting the same fight, right? Representation, not being marginalized, being represented in white spaces and in mainstream media. So the fact that people of color are fighting amongst each other and marginalized voices and marginalized people are fighting amongst each other, I just think is really counterintuitive.
Yeah, because I think the worst I saw was when DeRay announced he was running for mayor.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So I was just like, who are all these people that have just sprung from the woodwork? And I'm just like, you don't even live in Baltimore. Why do some of you care?
Exactly. I retweeted like a few of his mayoral campaign tweets. And then someone, and it was a black girl that was like, you know, DeRay did this, this, and this, and sent me some link to some, I don't know, it looked like a Breitbart-esque kind of site anyway, but sent me a link to this site about all of these things that DeRay did, and I'm just like, I didn't even look through it. I perused it for like 5 seconds, and I'm like, you know what, I'm clicking this crap out. So it's frustrating. I mean, I can't imagine the stuff that he goes through, but it's just a shame. It really is.
Yeah. One day, we will actually get ourselves together. I mean, you know, there's people who have done terrible things, but trying to drag the 20-year-old skeletons out of the closet once they're dry and dusty bones doesn't serve anyone's purpose.
Exactly. Because we all grow up and change.
Yep, and we all have those skeletons. So just like that person has those screenshots and those quote-unquote receipts, I'm sure you have some receipts as well. Yeah, we all have those skeletons, and, you know, I think it's a waste of time. Like, you should be doing more with your time than filtering through someone's timeline from years ago or going on the internet and finding information about them to somehow discredit them.
It's got to be pure spite. I mean, even, like, holding a grudge for 10 years is unreasonable, because if you think about it, that person doesn't exist anymore. We change over time.
Right. It's unhealthy. True. It's very unhealthy.
Yeah, but to actually dig up stuff from the past, it's got to be spite, mostly.
Spite and having nothing else to do, because I have plenty to do, even without a day job. I am still busy, so I want to know where they have all the spare time. Give me some. But back to what we were talking about before. But, you know, Jamie, since you mentioned that you're not currently a gamer and gaming wasn't always a focus on Black Girl Nerds, I'm curious as to what prompted the Diversity in Gaming series, you know, especially since, you know, like, other people are covering it. And I've always read Black Girl Nerds as more as, like, TV movie kind of blurty stuff, not so much the gaming sphere.
Right, right. And that's something that I wanted to shift. I was thinking about this, so I'm trying to remember what sparked the Diversity in Gaming series, because Lauren Warren, who's been on your show, she is the editor of the Diversity in Gaming series. She's the one that's responsible for gathering up all the editorials from inquiries of gamers that are interested in being featured and writing them up on the site. But I think you had tweeted something out, and there was like a trending hashtag. I don't remember what it was, but it was about Black people not being represented in the gaming community. And
so,
do you remember what that was? Was it I need diversity? I think there was another hashtag that you were using.
I was using it, but I didn't start it. It was Game So White.
Game So White. Yes, that was what it was.
Yeah, I didn't start that one, and I'd have to go back through my archive to find out who did. A lot of people thought I did. But
you were using it a lot, and that's why I linked it to you, because it was your tweets that I stumbled upon that made me think, you know what, this is a very interesting topic, and also I really would like to see more gaming content on the site, but most importantly, it's show the fact that there are Black people out there and people of color that are making games, that are gamers, that have, you know, gaming companies that they own. And I think it was the whole Gamergate fallout where people were like, make your own games type of thing, when Black people were asking for diversity and inclusion. And I'm like, you know what? We are actually making our own games. We do have software companies that we're running, and I'm going to feature those folks. So that's where the Diversity in Gaming series kind of stemmed from, that whole between the Gamergate fallout and the hashtags that you were using and all of that fuss on Twitter.
Yeah, because Game's So White, I'd have to look back, but I think it regenerated because of the Polygon piece that Tarek Musa did about The Witcher 3.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
And, you know, I initially had no interest in this game, and his talk of the game, because the man loves the game. It's not like he is just, you know, ragging on it because, oh, games are terrible. It's like he had put in almost 200 hours before he even wrote that piece.
Mm.
You don't put in 200 hours in a game that you hate. Like, I am spiteful, but I am not that spiteful. Or do I have that much free time? And so that's where it really came back and started trending because, you know, unfortunately the abuse ramped up for him after that because, oh no, you cannot love a thing and criticize it, apparently. So it was interesting to see that came back because when I did my talk at GX3, we talked about it, and I couldn't remember where exactly it originated, because supposedly it had been around and then came back.
Oh, okay.
Because of the article, so I will have to dig back, because I actually was tweeting out, like, who started this? Because people kept attributing to me. I was like, I'm not going to take credit for what I didn't do. And, of course, now I'm drawing a total blank, because it's been a while since we've had to use the hashtag.
Yeah.
But it's a day ending in Y, so who knows what will happen.
Very true. But I'm you know, I'm grateful for that happening because then, you know, I wouldn't have thought to have this series. And I think it's a very important series to have because this is, again, another community of people that are not being recognized for the work that they actually are doing. And I think that's one of the things that we also need to focus on too. Yes, we're fighting the fight of representation and we want to be included, but we also need to remember that there are people that are already out there doing the work that aren't being recognized and they're not being spotlighted. So that's why the Diversity in Gaming series is so important, because we are highlighting people that are, you know, really making a lot of moves and really being a voice for many of us in this community in the gaming space, including you. So I just think that, you know, having that series has been so valuable to Black Girl Nerds, and I want to continue to let that thrive. And I know Lauren's been bogged down with a lot, and now she's a podcaster with Nerds of Prey, but I really want to revitalize that series and also just focus on more gaming content in general, because even though I'm not a gamer now, I certainly don't want to, you know, dismiss or erase people that are interested in gaming from having, you know, perspectives on the website.
So do you plan on expanding the series or collaborating with existing communities or devs?
I really want to, because I don't want the website to just be like, I don't want it to be a monolith. Like, that's what I'm breaking away from. There's so many geek sites out there right now, and a lot of them do focus on specific subcultures within a subculture of geek and nerd fandoms, whether they just focus on comic books or they just focus on sci-fi, fantasy, television, film. I want it to be very diverse, and gaming is something that is a part of nerd culture. It's a very important part of nerd culture. There's tons of conventions out there that make tons of money having folks come from all over the world to visit and purchase games and show their games. So I definitely want to allow that series to evolve and grow, and I'd love to partner, you know, with you guys and anyone else out there that's interested in sharing this space and having BGN highlight your work, because that's what this is all about for me. I just want to give folks that don't really have, you know, a means to get their work or their content put out there to have a space where they can do that. So whether that's through the website, whether that's through a podcast interview, what have you, that's really what the whole point of having these kinds of series is all about.
Cool. Well, I have a long list of names to give you, and like I said, we can definitely chat more once we are done recording. But since you brought up conventions, I was wondering, you know, what do you wind up talking about? Because, you know, as you know, and actually I'll just kind of combine these next two questions because they're related. Well, one, what do you talk about when you wind up on panels? Like you said, you meant you're going to New York Comic Con. Mm-hmm. And San Diego. And then do you find that you're often pigeonholed as a person to speak just on diversity issues on Nerd Spaces because of the focus of BGN?
Yes. I'm now seeing that there's a lot of quote-unquote diversity panels happening at large cons, which I think is good, because diversity is a conversation that we're going to continue to have till everybody has a fair fight in this space. But yeah, I think the questions or the panel topics that I talk about are mostly diversity type panels. And I would like to do more than just that, because I don't want it to sound like I'm a robot and I'm saying the same thing over and over again from one convention to the next. So I would love to do panels about, you know, how to succeed in podcasting, or how to have a large social media following, or, and I've actually done a panel at NACOCon, it's in Hampton, Virginia, about social media. So, and that was a panel that I created. Most of the panels that I've been on have been panels by other folks, and they just asked me to be a part of it. But this was one that I did for myself with some folks from BGN. So I thought that that was important to kind of focus on social media, because it's huge, and I don't see a lot of cons talking about that. So anyway, I do feel like now we are kind of in a time when there's Black women that are creating these type of spaces, and people of color in general, when they're asked to be on panels, that it always has to be the diversity panel. But, you know, I'm not against that, but I'd like to see something more than just us being pigeonholed, like you said.
Yeah, I would like to talk about technology things. I've got a usability degree, and there's so many other topics I would like to speak about. But, you know, unfortunately, you also, like, have to deal with people know you for X, so they think that's all you can or want to speak about.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that's the problem. Like, people have assumptions about you before they actually really, or they just don't take the time to research you. They just heard about you from a friend, or they just see a Twitter account and look at the link on the page and go, okay, I'll ask her about this. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I think people need to probe a little bit more when it comes to asking folks to be on panels. You know, but I'm honored to be on a panel, like, period. Like, the first time I did a panel was when I was at Geek Girl Con 2 years ago. That's been my first panel ever. So this is still a new experience for me. And whenever I'm asked to be on a panel, I'm always honored by that. And I mean, I've been on panels at some of the biggest cons right now. So that's been a huge accomplishment, because, you know, not many people get to do that, that are in these spaces. So I'm definitely honored, and it's been a great opportunity.
Being on panels is interesting. Whenever you do your own panel and you're the person proposing it, one word of advice I'd have is nag people. Not in a, like, email them every other day, but kind of, are you sure you can really do this? Because I've had that experience where I've been asked to be on a panel and then nobody has their act together.
Mm.
And that is never fun, because you don't want to be that person on stage who literally has no idea what's going on, but you're not the person who proposed the panel, but people just remember y'all were all together on stage. So even if I'm not moderating, I'll be that person, like, so we got 2 weeks. What's going on?
Yeah, that actually kind of happened to me on a couple of panels. And I mean, I wing it. I tend to wing things a lot when it comes to, when it comes to panels, because I'm still new to this, so I kind of don't know what I'm doing. So, yeah, it would be nice to get the prep, to know the questions in advance, to know what I'm, you know what the talking points are. But when I do deal with situations where they're not organized in that way, then I just try to wing it. And somehow, it's very weird. I'm able to manage to do it once I'm there on the stage. So it's sort of like a Sasha Fierce kind of moment for me, where I'm like, you know, like I'm having like this outer body experience, and I'm not really Jamie. I'm just like Miss Professional, and I know exactly the answer to your question, and I'm able to articulate it properly, and people understand what I'm saying. So, and I don't get too nervous when I'm up there. Like, I'm only nervous up until the moment that I'm there, but once I sit in the chair and I grab the bottled water and I start speaking, then it just goes away. So yeah, it's been okay when it's not very organized, but it helps to have an organized, you know, moderator that gives you prep and, you know, prepares you for what you're going to say and all of those things. It makes it for definitely a better panel, I think.
Definitely.
No, the entire process seems messy, judging by the number of people I know who have been on panels because someone asked them 7 minutes before the panel started.
That's happened to me before. Yeah, someone's.
Yeah, everyone seems to have one of those stories, yeah. So it can't be too uncommon.
No.
Speaking of the stories we end up with, what would you say would be what would you say has been like your best experience running Black Girl Nerds?
The best experience is the meetups. I love it. I really love, and I know this might sound like cliche and trite, but I really love meeting people and, you know, shaking their hand or giving them a hug. I actually love hugs. So doing the offline meetups when I go to these conventions has been so much fun. And talking to folks that I converse with on Twitter on a daily basis and meeting them face to face and getting pictures and taking selfies with them is just, it's, I really love it. So that is the best part of doing all of this and being a part of this space. Definitely.
Cool. Well, as we kind of talked about earlier, you are doing all the things. So what is coming up next for you, either convention-wise, on the site, personally, if you want to share?
Yeah. Convention-wise, I think I'm going to be on a panel. We're still working it out at Tidewater Comic Con, which is in Virginia Beach, Virginia, my hometown, and that's in May. And then July is the big convention, San Diego Comic Con, where I'm going to be press, which is pretty big for us. I've been trying to get press credentials for a long time, and finally they said yes. So that'll be a really cool experience for me for the first time. Being a press person there. And then I will be at Dragon Con, which is in September, and that should be fun. I was there last year, and New York Comic Con. So those are the cons that I have on my schedule for this year. Things that are happening with BGN, the podcast, we actually have some episodes that I'm working on, so I'll give you guys the exclusive here, but we have an interview that's coming up with the cast of Pee Wee Herman. He's got like a new like Netflix show that's coming out.
Is it a movie?
Is it a movie? Okay, see?
Yeah, I believe it is.
I haven't even listened to the interview clip yet, so it tells you what I know, but I didn't do the interview. we had some folks from BGN, some contributors, go to South by Southwest, and they were able to interview a lot of great folks. We just dropped an episode this week with Key and Peele. They did an interview with them, so it's been a fantastic experience getting press credentials for South by Southwest, which I really hope I can go to next year. So that will be happening on the next episode of the BGM podcast. And just the website, I update editorials every day, so just bookmark blackgirlnerds.com on the website. Support us by way of purchasing our t-shirts, blackgirlnerds.com/t-shirts. And I'm also working on some other things to help us really be able to have the budget to do these conventions, to have these meetups, you know, to get writers paid. So I am working on some things in the background. Like I really do need to do the Patreon thing. And I know, Tanya, we talked about that. So that's something that I'm working on right now, among other things like sponsorships and stuff like that. So those are the things that are happening with BGN right now.
Oh, that's not a small amount of stuff on your plate. So I hope you sleep at some point.
Oh my gosh. Sleep is so overrated in my world. It's just, it doesn't really happen that often, but yeah, it's a struggle.
Yeah. So we actually got some questions, and, you know, this is our kind of next to last segment. David, do you want to take the first question from our usual suspect, Tim?
Sure. Thane1982, Tim, a friend of our show. He asks, what are some of your favorite cons to attend, both for general nerdery and welcoming/acceptance?
Excellent question, Tim. Dragon Con in Atlanta is my favorite. Went for the very first time last year, and it was a blast. It's a con for the fans. Some of these conventions, you can tell it's all about business and networking and promoting, and Dragon Con just feels like a con where people generally just want to have a good time, and they just don't give a crap about anything else but dressing up, having a whole bunch of booze in their system, and getting their freak on. So, Dragon Con is my favorite for all things nerdery, and it's very inclusive and it's very diverse, which is very important to me. So it's in Atlanta, Georgia. So there's a lot of Black people and people of color in that city. So it's good to see folks that are cut from the same cloth as you dressing up as these really cool characters and just having a really good time. So yeah, Dragon Con's my fave.
Awesome. Well, I know that you're not currently gaming, but in terms of like either for the diversity series or stuff you may see and think, hey, if I was still playing, that would be cool. Do you have any developers or studios whose games you would consider a must-have?
Yikes. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I know I was playing like a lot of games by Zynga, but they do like all of the phone app stuff. And that was problematic for me because I would be like, you know, in the waiting room playing games or even like at a stoplight in my car and playing games on my cell phone while driving. So I really like what they're doing. And shout out to Christy Marks, creator of Jim and the Holograms, who we had on our podcast. She works over at Zynga. So yeah, I really like what they're doing, but I'm not gaming currently to even know like who the cool, you know, game developers are out there or, you know, the gaming companies out there or what are the greatest games to get. So yeah.
I mean that's totally fair. I mean, like I said, we've had people on here who are not, you know, not the biggest gamers or, you know, they're not gamers at all, but they're still talking about issues that we want to have discussions about. So there's no strike against you for not being a up-to-date gamer.
I'd love to go to like a gaming convention though and just like play games all day and do all of that fun stuff. So like E3, like I would love to go there. So maybe sometime in the future VGN can go up, make a trip out there. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Although E3 is hard to get press credentials for, I've heard.
That's what I've heard as well.
Maybe next year I'll try it, depending on where I am in life, because you never know.
David. Tim's last question is, have you had any big surprises with gaming diversity series, parentheses, or with Black Girl Nerds in general, on parentheses?
Have I had any surprises?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Curious to know surprises in what way. I mean, the diversity in gaming series really opened up the opportunity for a lot of people that were into gaming to contact us and say, hey, I just saw this gaming article on your site with an interview with someone and I would love to be featured. So, and even when you mentioned before, Tanya, that you didn't see like a lot of gaming articles on the site, that was something that people responded to saying, hey, I don't see a lot of gaming articles on BGN. So I'm really glad that this series has happened. So it did open up a conversation for people on Twitter to talk about gaming more, to invite themselves to be a part of the series, which is great. And I mean, in general with Black Girl Nerds, the only thing that's really surprising is when celebrities notice us. I think that's what's surprising. And when they actually say yes to us, you know, when we ask them, hey, do you want to be on the podcast? Or when they give us shout outs, you know, it's crazy to me that BGN gets that kind of attention. So like the whole thing with Shonda Rhimes and the shout out in Marie Claire magazine, like I didn't see that coming. And it still blows my mind to this day. That she would credit me as being one of her Twitter favorites. Like, that's ridiculous. Okay, you're Shonda Rhimes. Like, you own Thursday nights. So those things are very, very surprising to me. And, like, for example, on Twitter recently, someone tweeted me, and then they tagged in Ta-Nehisi Coates and said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if Ta-Nehisi Coates was on the Black Girl Nerds podcast? And I was like, yeah. Ta-Nehisi, do you want to come on the Black Girl Nerds podcast? And he said yes.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I'm just like, okay, wow, this is actually happening. So that'll be dropping sooner than later. But yeah, it's always surprising when they, you know, are very welcoming of this space because it scared me at the beginning. I was just like, okay, this site is called Black Girl Nerds. I hope people don't think that this is divisive or you know, racist, or, you know, I don't want people to think that, you know, we're anti-white. Like, that's not what this is about. And pretty much everybody gets it. Everybody with more than one brain cell in their head knows what this is supposed to be about. And I have a mission statement on the site just in case those people with half of a brain cell don't get it. They can read it if they can comprehend reading. But yeah, I'm always still surprised and flattered when VIPs kind of acknowledge us. It's a pretty cool thing to see.
Yeah, I admit a total flare of jealousy when Idris Elba followed you. I was like, what?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Because I was just like, well, I was just like, it was just one of those things. I'm like, that's really cool, but I had that flare of jealousy. I'm not even going to lie. Although it's not like I tweet like anything he'd be interested in, so.
But it was so random. Like, and that's the thing. I don't know how these things happen. I don't know if he just saw, like, the Twitter avatar with the girl with the pink glasses and saw Black Girl Nerds and just thought that was a cool thing. Or was it something that I said? But to get a follow from someone like him was just ridiculous. Like, it just blows my mind. And yeah, when that happened, which was a very interesting night because I was just talking about how sexy he is. So it was a third night for me. It was an Idris Elba, you know, appreciation night. And and he followed the account and he still does. And yeah, I need to muster up the courage to ask him to be on the podcast, but I haven't done that yet. So
okay, yeah. So I'm going to be a little shit and do this right now. Like, so, Idris Elba, you should be on the podcast. You should be. And y'all hear me typing. I'm actually doing this.
Oh, God. Maybe.
I am an enabler.
You know, someone did that with Ta-Nehisi, so who knows? Maybe if I respond and say, hey, Idris, you want to come on the show? He'll be like, yeah, that would be awesome. I would die, probably. I probably wouldn't make it to the podcast episode. Rest in peace, Jamie Broadnax. But hopefully someone will take over and the BGN legacy will continue on.
That's okay. Possible. You've gotten a lot of good people over the last 2 years. I actually listened to your episode with Cree Summer when it was airing.
Oh, no, I'm just like, I threw a tweet out. Let's see what happens. And if you retweeted me, I can follow you. If we are thud from your general direction of the country, be like, he answered.
My God, that would be so awesome. And I will love you guys forever if that. Oh, I see your tweet. I will love you guys forever if he actually says yes. I'm just gonna be like, oh my God, what can I give you guys? What do you want?
Well, let's see if it happens first.
No, I'm saying if he actually says yes, like, that would be just, yeah.
Oh my God, I would totally die. Because I, like, it would be both jealousy and, like, awesomeness in one thing. Because it'd be like, that's so cool. Wait, I should have asked him to be on our show. But I don't think he's a gamer, so. Actually, if I could, like, no, that'd be weird. Be like, I want a co-host just so I can talk to Idris Elba. That would be weird. That would be creepy. Like, I like it just not just for his acting, but for his music, because he actually does music.
That's true.
And I watched this documentary about the electronic music scene in London, because, like, I had no clue he did music until I saw his documentary, and then I went and, like, found his SoundCloud, and I was like, okay, this is really cool, and it's something to like him for besides just acting.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also a very... You know, he's an activist in a way with respect to diversity, because he spoke very publicly about the Oscar So White situation. So
yep.
He can speak to those issues, which is very relevant to your show.
Yeah, so maybe we could do like a co-cast.
Okay, we got it. We got this. We're doing it.
Ahead of ourselves.
Look, positive thinking, we're putting it out there, David. Although I might die if Idris Elba agrees to come on this show.
I'm telling you, I don't think we'll make it to the podcast. I think there's going to be a death that will happen, and we're going to have to figure out who's going to replace us to actually step in, because I just...
It would be our spirit communing through the podcast.
But we did get one more question before we kind of round out the end of the episode, what we're playing slash reading. Spaced Out Genius asked, how do you plan on preserving the culture with a capital C? And he tagged it Black Enterprise and Black Culture.
How do I plan on preserving the culture? Interesting. I see what he's saying with the question.
Mm-hmm.
I think just continuing to do what I'm doing and getting your support, because without your support, it's hard for me to continue to do this, right? So I ask everyone that's listening, including him, to support us by subscribing to the podcast, you know, checking out the website, spreading the word about Black Girl Nerds, purchasing our merchandise. Once I set up the Patreon account, be a patron, because I really want this space to evolve and grow and be something where it's a full-time gig for me. I could spend all of the hours of my day doing this instead of part of the hours of my day doing this, and also to have like a fully funded staff that's helping me run things, because it's hard doing everything, and I don't do everything on my own. I'm grateful to have a large amount of contributors, a large amount of co-hosts on the podcasts, and editors, copy editors and stuff that are in the background, podcast editors that help me out. But a lot of the bulk of the, you know, the heavy work is just me. So it can be very overwhelming. So it would be nice to have like a staff and a paid staff to run BGM. But that requires your support. So that'll help us grow. That'll help us develop. And we can definitely preserve this for as long as we want. And sustainability is really the way to preserve, you know, blurred culture, I think. As long as we maintain that sustainability, then that can definitely happen.
True. You know, and support for a lot of endeavors is important because, you know, like, you wouldn't be here almost 5 years later doing this if there wasn't support.
Right.
I wouldn't still be doing this almost 2 years later if there wasn't support, either by, you know, Patreon or by donations or, you know, the people who listen to us every week. So I think that's a really important factor a lot of us don't think about, because even a tweet, which costs you nothing, if you've got a large following and you retweet something, it gets out to that many more people.
Exactly, exactly. And that's very important, because I want to make sure that I'm also supporting independent artists that want to get their works promoted and seen. And people email me all the time, I got a Kickstarter, can you tweet it out? I got a Kickstarter, can you do a press release on your site about it? And I'm more than happy to do those things. So, you know, it definitely goes hand in hand by, you know, supporting BGN. And then in turn, we're able to support you, the fans.
Yep. Okay. We are finally down to our last segment, as we like to call it. And we wind down the show every week with talking about what we're playing slash reading. And since you are our guest, you get to go first.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned before, I don't game currently. So I'll talk about what I'm reading. I do have an advanced copy of Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther. It's amazing. It's brilliant. And I think everyone who is a fan of Black Panther, or even if you're a new fan and you're interested in reading, you're going to love it. You're absolutely going to love it. Rich, fresh story. And I'm really excited. I'm also reading Bitch Planet. Huge fan. Been a huge fan since it dropped. Kelly Sue DeConnick is a friend of the podcast. So I love that book. And Saga is another book. Both books are by Image. That's just Saga, you know, I wake up in the morning, I go to bed at night, and I think of all things Saga. It's a brilliant, beautiful, story and such a rich universe. And, I don't know anybody who has read Saga that doesn't like it. Like, everybody has very strong, passionate feelings towards that book. So yeah, those are what I'm reading right now. These are all comics, by the way. So yeah.
Cool. So I actually, you know, survived GDC and came back and started playing Tom Clancy's The Division. I'm still feeling my way around it. I'm only like level 5, but there has been a few things that have kind of bothered me. Someone pointed out that you will find looters and you have the option to kill them, but apparently the looters attack you first. So I'm not sure if it's a let's kill brown people and give you a reason so you don't feel entirely bad about it? Or is it they shot at me first so I have to defend myself things? Like I said, I'm only level 5. So I'm still feeling my way around it. I actually did have a chance to talk to one of the people who wrote a majority of the division. So as I get further in, maybe I can talk more to this person and maybe get them on a future podcast, especially to talk about narrative stuff in games when you have something like this happening in such a major city, but is also based off a series of books. Because I've not read the Clancy books in ages. I just like the beta when I played it. I tried a little bit of Galaxy. I'm not feeling it. It was a free PS Plus game. It looks kind of like R-Type. And I'm like, nah, this isn't doing it for me. Sorry, Steve, because I know our friend of the show, Steve Lubitz, really likes Galaxy. And then I actually remembered when you were talking, Jamie, that I've read a comic lately. Because I'm bad at reading comics and keeping up. Oh, because Weekly and Money is two things I don't really have a lot of right now. So keeping up with comics is expensive. But as everyone knows, I'm a huge Dragon Age nerd. And I really haven't been too into the comics since Mage Killer from Greg Rucka, who's writing it, is amazing. I like sat and read all 4 issues that are out like in the span of an hour. So if you're a Dragon Age fan and are interested in lore and possibly Tevinter stuff, I would recommend picking it up, and I'll put a link in the show notes. David, what have you been playing?
I am fairly boring. I'm still playing Fallout 4, except this time I'm a jerk to everyone. And there are actually quite a few quests that just end early if you're a jerk.
Okay, then.
And I also managed to, I put some time into Starbound because I still own it, and it's Terraria with spaceships, which makes it slightly better than Terraria.
Okay, then.
I think while I was editing the last podcast, I built a sea base.
Okay. I'll have to check out Starbound. I think I have Terraria, and I've never actually played it again. It was one of those, I got it free, so I'm going to take it, and then I never actually play it. So my PS4 is starting to resemble my Steam library, which is kind of sad.
Well, I mean, the lineage of inspiration is kind of silly. I mean, Terraria is Minecraft, but 2D, so this is 2D Minecraft with spaceships, if you really want to think about it that way.
Okay, in that case, I will pass because Minecraft bored me. So, it did. I tried. I really tried to play it, and I was bored, and B, I was frustrated because it wasn't never really clear what you were supposed to do beside dig, and I was like, yeah, no, this isn't grabbing me.
Yeah, you fly from planet to planet stealing stuff. Or building stuff, I guess.
I know you had me at the stealing stuff, and it's a video game, so...
Like disassembling people's houses so you can add them to your town.
Eh, you're relocating them. I know this sounds terrible. I was like, wait, that sounded really bad.
It's the fastest way to get those tiles.
Okay.
That you use for building buildings is by taking apart buildings. But there aren't many uninhabited buildings, as it turns out.
Oh, dear. Well, on that happy colonialism note, we are going to wrap up the show with Jamie telling everyone where they can find her.
Indeed. So you can find me at blackgirlnerds.com. That's the website. You can find me, Jamie, on Twitter, usually. My personal Twitter is at Jamie Broadnax. I tend to tweet from there every now and then, but not that often because I'm too busy on at blackgirlnerds, which is where you can find the Twitter account where we have all of the editorials come out of that account, and then just me ranting and raving about randomness, and then a lot of live tweeting happens out of that account as well. And then I do have a podcast. It airs weekly. Usually the episodes drop on Sunday nights or Monday morning, depending on how tired I am that weekend. But you can check that out, and you can subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher Radio is where you can find us there. And I think that's pretty much it. Those cons that I mentioned before, I'll be traveling to those. There's no other special events happening right now, but I would encourage all of you guys, if you go to the website, if you ever want to get updated on what we're doing at BGN, subscribe to our newsletter. As soon as you go to the website, it pops right up. And then you get updates about all of the things that are happening in the Black Girl Nerds community And thank you guys so much for having me on your show. This was great.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad you could make it on. David, where can people find you?
First of all, thank you for coming on our show. I mean, it seems mutually beneficial. people can find me on Twitter at Red Conversation, on Patreon at patreon.com/redconversation, and at davidlreeves.com, which is where you can find the contact form to email me if you've written something you'd like me to look at. I'm a fiction editor by trade. You can also just email me about that at work@davidlreeves.com. And I think that basically covers it.
David works very hard on the sound editing, so please give him money at his Patreon. Folks have been very kind with mine, and I think David definitely deserves the same level of support because that is his job right now beside the game he's working on. As for me, I'm Cyphertier everywhere. Most recently, you will see me at PAX East in a couple of weeks, and then I am an invited guest at PenguinCon in Detroit. And I will be blogging and live tweeting as time allows during those events. So this is episode 42 all wrapped up. And then next week, we will talk to Mel Fleming of BioWare, who does localization. So that'll be a fun and interesting conversation. So Jamie, thanks again for spending part of your evening with us. And this episode will be live by the time people hear it on Tuesday, April 6th. We'll be right back.